This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth in the Cowichan Valley. You'll find Unsworth pouring new releases at the Duncan Farmers Market every Saturday from 9 to 2. And the Cowichan Valley Wine Festival is taking place August 23rd through 25 at the absolutely gorgeous Shaunican Lake School. All the details can be found at unsworthvineyards.com. This is Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We think it's year 12. We started our life in a studio in a barn on the Naramata Bench. This week, we're on Vancouver Island for the whole of the show. We're going to start in Courtney Comox for the annual BC Shellfish Festival, where all of the best chefs in the province and, frankly, across Canada and some in the States and around the world gather to celebrate BC's fishery and the sustainability of such. Now, that's really the point in question, because the BC fishery is in deep trouble. Some people are in denial, but for the most part, people know you have to take care of the fishery or it will be long gone. We saw an example of that on the East Coast with the gray cod. They fished it almost to extinction. And we're spoiled rotten on the West Coast because the fishery has been sensational. So everybody's involved, sport fishing, commercial, First Nations, the farm fish. And by the time we get finished here, I think it will become plain why we're in such trouble and what we're doing about it, really. And the question I'm asking is, what is the responsibility of the chefs and their kitchens in terms of the sustainability of our fishery? And then I ask those same chefs, what's the responsibility of the audience, we the customer? What can we do when we dine and we would like our wonderful spring salmon on the plate? If we don't order salmon, what do we order? And how do we know who's serving what on the menu? Those questions are going to be asked. Answering will be the amazing Ned Bell from Oceanwise and the Vancouver Club, and one of the prime spokesmen for the fishery in Canada. Jean-Francis Qualia from Provence Marineside. Nathan Fong, the producer of this event. Huang Dang from Top Table Group. Chris Andreza, the executive chef from Fanny Bay Oyster Restaurants. Ryan Bissell, the director of food and beverage at Villa Airy Resort, the Malahat. We'll also talk to the pride of Lima, Peru, Ricardo Valverde from Ancora, just across from Granville Market and in West Van. And after we finish up with the annual BC Shellfish Festival in Courtney Comox, we head south on the Island Highway to Ladysmith, to a beautiful park just below Ladysmith. And on a bench in that park, we meet three people. Karen Elgersma from Tourism Cowichan, Mike Nierichlow from Emmendare, and from Enrico Winery, Lauren Inglis, the manager. And we'll be talking about the second annual Cowichan Valley Wine Festival, which happens August 23rd through 25th. And then an interview I did in between those two events in Nanoose, just off the Island Highway, a wonderful meeting place, a coffee shop, a restaurant called Rusted Rake, right in the middle of a farmer's field, because they're the farmers. And I hook up with Brent Rowland, the new winemaker at Avro Creek in the Cowichan Valley. And we'll talk about Avro Creek, but we'll also talk about his new field blends, a white and a red called Joue, J-O-U-E. Field blends, with the word field blends actually on the label. Yes, he's a troublemaker. So we finish with Brent Rowland from Avro Creek and Joue. All the details for our guests can be found at tastingroomradio.com, which is part of a larger site called mulligans2.ca. We start this show where we should start it, in conversation with Ned Bell from Oceanwise and Vancouver Club. Enjoy. I have had a very interesting series of conversations with the chefs in Tofino. I was just there. And what came up continually was, A, the fishery, how the sports fishermen are handling this, the fishery up there, the guides and the community. But secondly, how the chefs are handling it. And then the third part of that was, what are we, the customer, saying or expecting? Are we grieving about this, not having this bounty of harvest? So let's take it one at a time. How's the fishery that you know of?
Well, the fishery is, that's an impossible question to answer because there's many fisheries in BC. Depends on the species of fish that we're talking about.
Spring.
Spring salmon. Yeah. Okay, you want to dive right into the challenge.
It's the star of the show, so.
Sure. Well, it's one of the stars. Wild salmon, of course, here in BC is an iconic species. We're the only place on the planet that has five unique species of wild salmon. You know, there's spectacular wild Pacific halibut and rockfish and lingcod and sablefish and shellfish, et cetera, et cetera. But Chinook salmon. So Chinook and sockeye are the two species of salmon that we really cherish the most. And that, you know, is something that I would love to see shift into maybe some premium quality pink salmon, chum salmon, coho salmon. The Chinook fishery currently has been temporarily delayed in its north coast opening. So the south coast fishery, which is basically the top of Vancouver Island and below, that's the south coast. And then above that is the north coast. And so most of the seafood that we would consume, most of the salmon, sorry, that we would consume would be from the north coast later on in the year. So this year it's been delayed until the middle of August, although that's still up for some discussion with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans, the Minister of Fisheries, Jonathan Wilkinson, and the BC Salmon Marketing Council, which is obviously lobbying for this for the commercial fishermen. So there's sport fishermen, which is the recreational fishery. Yeah. There's the First Nations fishery, which is the ceremonial and food fishery for the First Nations across the province. And then there's the commercial fishery. Yeah. And so there's those three fisheries that are in the same conversation. And it is a delicate debate as to who has access, who gets access when. And wild salmon, you know, depending on the species, has had some very challenging years. This year is no different. The reason why I mentioned the south coast and the north coast is because one of the reasons why we're having some issues with the south coast fishery is because of the southern resident killer whale population. Yep. And that being one of the main food sources for the southern resident killer whales, they being the governing bodies, both provincial and federal, want to try and do everything in their powers to protect the fishery, to protect the fish, and to protect the prey for southern resident killer whales.
You know, you always talk about, and everybody, I think we all know about the food chain. So the killer whale orcas are eating on those salmon. The salmon are eating on the herring. I watched the herring fishery happen in front of me in Nanoose Bay, and they cleaned out that bay. Mm-hmm. They cleaned it out. The fleet of 20 or 30 boats cleaned it out.
Yeah.
Herring gone. And I asked the neighbors, I said, where's it going? They said, well, it's the roe is going to Japan and the rest of it's fertilizer. And I'm thinking, couldn't we have used that herring for our own fishery? How long is that fishery going to be around? I don't want to make you, but I need to bounce this off somebody because it really pissed me off.
It's a really valuable question. And listen, herring are a delicious fish. We should be eating more of those.
I love herring.
We should be eating more of those foraged fish, so fish down the food chain. But we don't. In North America, we eat four species of fish, some sort of salmon, some sort of tuna, some sort of whitefish, and by far the most consumed seafood in North America is shrimp. We want to eat center of the plate, which is how we were raised, right? Roast chicken, pork tenderloin, steak. And fish is really no different. We don't have a very diverse diet. So until we as consumers eat differently and eat maybe less large portions of center of the plate protein, we won't be able to really take care of those fisheries, those foraged fish fisheries, in the same way that maybe they're taken care of in other places in the world. Herring are the bounty for all species in the ocean. They're one of the superstars. You know, everything eats herring. And herring is really the canary in the coal mine. If there's no herring, there's no healthy salmon, there's no healthy whales, there's no healthy eagles, there's no healthy trees, bears, you know, it goes on and on.
I can't deny the fishery. That's their livelihood. But row to Japan? Japan?
Here's the thing. There are actually some really good success stories about herring row on kelp. Where they actually don't even kill the fish. They harvest the roe after it's released, and the fish continue on during their life cycle. So there are some sustainable opportunities within the herring fishery. Like you, I am here to support fishermen, communities, the ecosystem, and the species, right? Those four things are really valuable, and we have to remember it's not just about, like, hey, we can't harvest that species because, I mean, it could be that simple. Life could be that black and white, but it's never that black and white.
Annette Bell, Executive Chef, Oceanwise Vancouver. What is the culinary response? What is the culinary responsibility to this fishery in this day and age?
Should I be serving wild salmon 12 months of the year? Well, if I live in Vancouver, maybe. I mean, it's very difficult to say definitively whether I should be serving wild salmon in Toronto. Maybe we need to look towards responsible aquaculture as a way to continue to have access to clean, healthy protein, whether it's fresh or frozen, whether it's farmed or wild, because we need all four of those things.
Yeah,
there's good wild and bad wild. There's good farmed and bad farmed. We need to try and work with those industries to improve. So do I want to serve Chinook? Of course I want to serve Chinook. If I know the fishermen, if I know who and where and when that fish was caught.
Be aware is what you're saying.
Well, ask more questions, dive in. You know, do you know the fishermen? If you know the fishermen and you're supporting a community-supported fishery, you're doing yourself a lot of favors. And you're probably actually paying the fisherman a fairer price for his or her catch. It also might mean taking a break from a few species for a period of time. And I'm not saying that about Chinook. I'm not saying that about wild salmon. But I am saying we need to be aware that we didn't have those difficult conversations about Atlantic cod and where did that put us. I come from six generations of fishermen from Buren, Newfoundland. I know this. My family doesn't live there because we took too much of the fish. I want us to eat pink salmon. I want us to eat some of the other abundant runs and maybe lay off some of the ones that aren't as abundant. There's some really healthy Chinook runs. There's some really healthy sockeye runs. They obviously run at different times. There's, you know, 2 and 4 year cycles. Ask more questions. Don't just say, I want spring salmon. Say, I want spring salmon from the North Coast, from Skipper Otto, from Organic Ocean, from, you know, figure out where that food is coming from. If you don't know, I would say don't eat it.
Here's the part you're going to like. How do people get their ocean information? Where do they go?
Well, simple step, you know, go to OceanWise, ocean.org, look for OceanWise recommended seafood. Become a member of a community-supported fishery like Skipper Otto. You know, wherever you live on the West Coast, whether it's in Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, Victoria, you can become a member of Skipper Otto or, you know, a collective of fishermen who are doing it the right way.
Last question. If you had a room full of chefs and you left them with one final thought.
Try and understand aquaculture. I really think we still are the haves. We get access to this thing that Mother Nature still gives us, which is wild fish, but we're running out. So dive into aquaculture, understand it, do yourself a favor, because your menus will look different in 10 years, maybe more different than they ever have before.
Thanks, Ned.
Thanks, TDM.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
In rapid succession, we're going to talk to Jean-Francis Huaglia, the executive chef and founder of Provence Marina Side, Vancouver, and Nathan Fong, executive chef, producer of the BC Seafood Festival, and the host and producer of Fong on Food. Jean-Francis Caglia, executive chef and founder, Provence Marina Side in Vancouver.
So in a restaurant, we probably have around 70 to 80% ocean-wide seafood, sustainable seafood, which is important for me. And I've been in the business. My first restaurant was opened 20 years ago. And nothing, you know, nobody cares really, etc. But slowly OceanWise came on, and I was one of the first 10 restaurants part of OceanWise, and motivate and give us awareness of what to use or not to use, etc. So we've been following that path for the last 17 years now.
What can you do to help this fishery?
So basically, it's all about education. And also, as you know, it takes time to change habit from people. We all have our own thing. We like to eat our own thing, and we don't want change. But slowly but surely, if the restaurant start to introduce different seafood, different fish, sustainable fish, then people will caught on, and they do caught on over the years. I know the demand is higher and higher for sustainable seafood, for sure.
Jean-Francis Caglia, executive chef and founder, Provence Marina Side in Vancouver. What would you offer as a as another choice?
So as a salmon, I mean, it's not really a salmon, but the steelhead trout, it's a great sustainable fishery farmed. It is a farm, but it's sustainable.
And it's a beautiful fish.
Beautiful fish for sure. And a lot of, and so I've served the steelhead for quite a few years now, maybe 3 or 4 years at least, I would say.
Do you do herring?
I do herring. I do smoke herring. What else we use? Halibut, of course.
Mackerel.
Black cod. Mackerel as well. I have a little bit of dish with mackerel on it, a peppercorn mackerel kind of thing. That steel fish is was strong flavor, and people are still, some people, well, most people actually are afraid of strong flavor fish. That's the one thing.
Really?
I think so.
How about oysters?
Oysters, love oysters. Oysters have been, I think, sustainable for a long time.
And they're farmed, yes.
And they're farmed, yes, yes. Awesome. Oyster, my favorite. I could eat a million oysters myself.
Have a nice ride home.
Thank you very much.
Jean-Francis Caglia, executive chef and founder, Provence, Marina Side in Vancouver.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio.
Joining us here in the studio, which is no more than two plastic chairs at a long table, is Nathan Fong, executive chef producer of the BC Seafood Festival, Fong on Food, Vancouver, British Columbia, when he's home.
We're not just on two lawn chairs. Look at this location.
Oh, no, it's gorgeous.
Oh, my God. And what an amazing spot for a seafood festival.
Now, here's the thing. I went to Tofino last week, and I was doing interviews with chefs that you know, of course. We got into a discussion, and they wanted to talk about what were the chef's responsibilities in this day and age of the challenged fishery on the West Coast, and frankly, in all of Canada. What's the responsibility out of the kitchen? And then what are we hearing back from the customers of those chefs as to what we expect as customers?
Well, it's interesting you ask this, because at the expo this past week, there was a panel discussion on farm versus wild. And it's interesting, someone, you know, we can't keep on raping and pillaging our waters. You know, we have to be sustainable with our wild stock.
Balance.
Balance. And you know, this was very interesting. Someone said, when you go around the world, when you see salmon, it's just salmon. Yeah. Only in BC where you find wild and farmed. And people ask the question, is this wild or is this farmed? Well, it was the farmed salmon farmers that started saying that they're farmed salmon, because before it was always salmon. But they had to differentiate farmed salmon from wild salmon. But when you go anywhere around the world, they just have the word salmon. So we have to get, and now it's done sustainably. You know, last year was the first time that I went on a salmon farm, and it has changed a lot in the last 5 years. It had to change. We're sustainable. You know, when we've had problems with sea lice and everything, and we know we've overcome this, you know, when we have all the other countries doing salmon farming, and they look to us because we're a leader in salmon farm, and we have to be sustainable.
What do you think the customers are? Have they changed the attitude at all, changed over the table? Or is it just, I want my spring salmon?
No, I think it's the locals. British Columbians do ask whether, you know, we've always supported wild. But they have to realize for the future we have to support farm salmon. That is the way to go. And people want inexpensive fish. They don't want to pay the prices of wild stock. And that is the way of the future. We have to supply the billions around the world.
How do people get their information, Nathan? What's the best website you can recommend?
You can go to BC Salmon Farmers Association. You can go to Sable Fish Association. You can go to any of the farm. They will have an association. And that's where you get your information on the web.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Nathan Fong, executive chef and producer of the BC Seafood Festival and the host of Fong on Food.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. Just a reminder that the Cowichan Valley Festival runs August 23rd through 25 and kicks off with a party at the pavilion at Shawnigan Lake. There'll be live music all weekend at Unsworth Vineyards and a long table winemaker's dinner in the winery August 25th. A 5-course menu paired with specially selected wines. Your host for the evening is winemaker Dan Wright. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by The Hatch Wines. You're going to want to check out the brand new release of the Screaming Frenzy Cab Franc and the new vintage of Black Swift Oak Street Chardonnay, just won a gold medal. and they have just released a new vintage of Cyclops Love, of which they're just a little obsessive. TheHatchWines.com.
Ricardo Valverde, executive chef at Ancora Waterfront Dining and Patio, Vancouver and West Vancouver. I've used the phrase, the room's starting to get full, but the room's a glorious garden at the Filberg. We are in Courtney Comox. So you're on the water. You're right directly across from Granville Market. How do you approach fish, your fish content on the menu itself?
Our food is Peruvian Japanese, so we're in Nikkei. A lot of Peruvian chili, some products mixed with Japanese-influenced dishes. And the marriage of that, which is actually a cuisine of its own, that it's been going on in Peru since the 1960s or 70s, we bring it to Vancouver.
He is Ricardo Valverde, executive chef, Ancora Waterfront Dining and Patio, directly across the water from Granville Market and in West Vancouver. Define a dish. Give me a description of a dish, maybe your most popular dish off the menu.
One that defines Ancora is our black cod or our sable fish, marinated Japanese style, so soy mirin sake, and then we finish it with the adobo style sauce made out of a Peruvian chili called panca. So it's panca chilies, make a paste out of that, then we add cumin, garlic, vinegar, oregano, and then basically we glaze the fish that has been marinated Japanese style with that Peruvian adobo style sauce, and then we throw it in the oven, and then we finish it torch aburi style.
I would describe that as engaging food.
Yes.
This is not food that just lays there on the table. Tell me about the fishery in Peru. How is it? Is it healthy?
Yes. Fishing in Peru is huge. There is a big movement there also when it comes to like sustainability and everything. Practices in a developing country are a little bit different, but there's a big movement of chefs there that are educating people, because sustainability of seafood is basically education. It's letting people know what is not right and what's right.
Ricardo Valverde, executive chef, Ancora Waterfront Dining and Patio. So, Ricardo, what about Ancora? What's Ancora doing to, in terms of the kitchen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we took over the space from Sea Restaurant, where it's the temple of Ocean Wise and sustainability of seafood in Vancouver. So the big responsibility that carried over, we try to keep the same sort of concept, right? We are Ocean Wise registered restaurant, and we try to make sure that everything that we bring into the restaurant has been responsibly caught.
Are you using farmed and wild?
Yes, we're using farm when the fish comes from a sustainable farm
and responsible.
Exactly, responsible and wild for sure as well. Like, I also make sure with my suppliers, I ask him, how is this caught? Is this good? And then if they give me the go-ahead, then we go for it.
Ricardo Valverde, executive chef, Ancora Waterfront Dining and Patio. When the spring salmon season comes along shortly, if they expect spring salmon like other years, what do you do about that in terms of the menu?
Oh, I already have a dish in mind, actually. And it's actually going to be some sort of Peruvian dish. So back home, we have this thing called locro, which is basically a squash dish. But it has it's our own take, basically. It's squash mixed with yellow chilies, queso fresco, like the fresh cheese, huacatay, which is a Peruvian mint. They call it the black mint. And it's kind of like a stew, but it's not rich. It's light and very summery in color and flavors, fresh, warm. And then we're going to serve it with a slow cook piece of salmon on top. I've already been talking to some of my guys about that. So it's funny that you mentioned the salmon situation. I have a dish in mind. If tomorrow at the competition they give me salmon, I might make it too.
Thank you, Ricardo. Thank you, man. Ricardo Valverde, executive chef at Ancora Waterfront Dining and Patio, Vancouver and West Vancouver.
You're listening to Tasting Room Radio with your host, Terry David Mulligan.
I have just found one of the competition judges has a reputation as being a supreme troublemaker and a damn fine chef, Huang Dang, executive chef, Top Table Group, Vancouver. How many years have you been here?
I don't know. I think it's my seventh or eighth year at this festival.
And you were the champion for how many years?
Last year was the first year of the Black Box, and I won it last year, so that's pretty cool.
Okay, I just want to keep track, that's all. I just spent a week over in Tofino talking to some of the chefs over there, because that's one of the things you could do. Strangely enough, I knew that I was coming here, and they were talking about the responsibility of chefs in this day and age, seafood cooking chefs, and their responsibility to keeping that water sustainable, keeping our fishery alive and well. How do you carry that responsibility, you personally?
Well, as chefs, I love to cook seafood, especially love to cook ingredients from our terroir. We want to keep cooking them. Like, that's the thing, is you want to keep having ingredients to showcase to our guests and eat, because they're pretty darn tasty. Yeah. And you don't want them to run out, and you don't want them to run out in this generation or the next. So, you know, the things that you do to ensure that we have spot prawns again every year, or salmon every year, or whatever it is, you know, you just have to, you have to adapt your cooking and your products you use. And a lot of times there's a lot of diamonds in the rough from the ocean. So, yeah, you know, you adapt and make sure that we're cooking the right things when at the right time, and setting ourselves up so that we can keep cooking these things for a long period of time. Cause you know, wild seafood could run out on us, and even sustainably farmed seafood could run out on us too, right? Because people need to eat, and we just have to be very conscientious nowadays about that, right?
Huang Deng, executive chef, Top Table Group in Vancouver. You know, there's a big moment coming up every year when that first spring salmon come in, and people go crazy. They just want to have that Chinook. Give me some Chinook, right? How can you lead them off into another direction?
You know what? In this day and age now, with that Chinook salmon and the state of the southern orca whales, just as chefs, I would suggest just don't serve it. Yeah. Just you know, if all of us chefs in our restaurants, if we decide not to serve Chinook salmon for a couple of years, that population will rebound considerably. The whales will be full, and like everything will go back to this.
And,
like,
and just, what about us, the customer? Well, what's our responsibility? Can we pound the table and say, where's my fish?
Customers need to be more in tune with programs such as OceanWise that do tell you where to get good seafood and eat good seafood and be the responsible consumer, right?
Are you judging here?
Yeah, I have to judge the competition.
Can you yell and heckle?
I don't know, but I might, probably.
Especially if they give you a microphone. Thank you, man.
I know. I shouldn't have one of those microphones.
Very true.
So.
Very true. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Huang Deng, executive chef, Top Table Group, Vancouver.
This is Tasting Room Radio, a home for passionate fans of food, wine, and friends.
Ryan Bissell, director of food and beverage at Villa Airy on Vancouver Island. Now, you're set. What are you setting up? You got a blaster going on.
Yeah, we're going to be quickly searing some albacore tuna with a blowtorch here. And just give it a light torch, and then I'll be slicing it for our crostini, a little bit of romesco sauce, garlic scape chimichurri, and some beautiful microgreens that I have from Morbetta Farms.
We've been talking to actually the chefs of Tofino and then the chefs here today about the fishery. You know, it's an ongoing thing that we're having to deal with. How's the tuna fishery that you know of?
Tuna's spectacular, and as I am aware, I think they manage the fishery quite well, so there's lots of stocks for that.
And how much fish on your menu?
Quite a lot, actually. We have a majority of seafood dishes at the restaurant.
Local, as much as possible?
Everything that we can, yeah. I stress that we have as good a product from local suppliers as we can get.
What are the customers asking? I mean, are they expecting to see spring salmon in all of its glory this fall?
We tell our guests, and we're quite open and honest with them, that we are going to reserve back that dish this year because we're going to try and help the stocks replenish.
They understand?
They understand. They get it. And they love sablefish, so that's not a problem.
Very cool. I was talking to Ann Sperling, and she tells me that she's headed your way to do a winemaker's dinner.
That's correct. We have the Robert Wild dinner, beautiful Riesling dinner from a renowned producer from Germany.
And Foster?
David Foster Foundation's coming up July 29th to August 3rd, the Simply Spectacular event. 5 days, or 3 days, actually, of incredible events happening.
Ryan Bissell, director of food and beverage, Villa Airy, Vancouver Island, the Malahat. Can you possibly describe your menu in a couple of words?
Our five-course chef's tasting menu, where you trust us and we deliver the best of British Columbia with a little hint of the Alps.
Tell me about your wine list.
We feature a lot of rare and unique vintages from across BC, with a heavy emphasis on ensuring that we get the best local product to British Columbia. For example, we'll be the only restaurant pouring Little Engine Platinum Rose, the Pinot Noir.
There you go.
Yeah.
Are you pouring Vancouver Island?
We pour quite a bit of wine from the Cowichan Valley. It's an up-and-coming region that has a lot of great exposure right now, and the Ortegas coming out of the Cowichan are incredible.
I'm going to interview tomorrow at 8:30 the new winemaker at Avril Creek, and he's messing around with natural.
Oh, his wild fermentation, some of his stuff that he's doing, the jus, which you're going to try tomorrow. They're exceptional. We're neighbors of them. We have a property right next door, and we couldn't be happier to be proper. Like,
I'm having jus for breakfast, yes.
Yeah, you will. It's good juice.
It's true. It's true, man. And tell them your location.
We're right at the very top of the Malahat Summit, just north of Victoria.
Thank you for this. Appreciate it. Have a great night.
Tim, thank you very much.
Ryan Bissell, Director of Food and Beverage, Ville Erie, Vancouver Island, the Malahat.
This is Tasting Room Radio.
Chris Andreza is the chef here from Fanny Bay Oyster Bar in Vancouver. He's cooking tonight octopus and chorizo with potatoes, sun-dried tomato, saffron aioli. He's part of the BC Shellfish Growers Association, the gala dinner. Chris, are you the chowder champ?
I was a tied chowder champ, yes.
So is the other guy, a person that you tied here?
He's right beside us. Just over here.
Okay. Okay, so otherwise, had they not been here, you were the champ of the day. Okay?
I was the champ.
What went into your chowder that won it for you?
I believe it was the smoked pork belly that did it. Yeah, we topped it off with a smoked pork belly. It was a corn and clam based chowder, and then we just topped it off with a little bit of smoked pork belly. I think that was the big win.
So tell me about this dish tonight, octopus and chorizo?
So we braised our octopus ahead of time. We're just going to give it a quick little sear with some chorizo and some sun-dried tomatoes and a little bit of saffron aioli.
Chris Andreza, Fanny Bay Oyster Bar, Vancouver. How's the oyster fishery these days?
The oyster fishery is great.
It's farmed.
It's farmed. It's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, there's new innovation that's coming up. We have our Sunseeker oyster that we're promoting quite a lot. It does. We do a float bag system with that.
Okay.
So it's floating, and instead of being tumbled to knock off all the frill, it's out on the ocean in a float bag, and the current actually knocks it around. So it's a little bit more of a less of a carbon footprint. You get a really nice deep shell, thick.
I was going to ask, does it change the taste, the texture?
It changes the texture. So you get a much deeper shell, and so that gives you a lot more meat.
Like you're cooking an octopus tonight. How's it doing?
So that's a bycatch. There's no fishery for that. So I feel very good using it. It's an ocean-wise product. And I just, you know, the poor things get caught, they got to do something with them. So,
and when people come to Fanny Bay, they're looking for oysters. That's the whole thing, right?
Yeah, they come, but, you know, at the restaurant we have a multitude of different things. You know, we do serve octopus. We have halibut right now. Spot prawn season's on. We're doing that.
Way to go, chef. Thank you.
Thank you.
He's about to dive into his octopus and chorizo and potatoes and sun-dried tomato and saffron aioli, the 13th annual BC Shellfish Festival. Chris Andreza from Fanny Bay Oyster Bar.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the Hatch Wines. Three very special wines you want to keep an eye on. Their great new Cab Franc, the Black Swift Vineyards 2016 Oak Street Chardonnay, winner of a gold medal at the All-Canadian Wine Championships, and gobsmack the 2018 Cyclops Love. All the details at thehatchwines.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Canada's number one winery, Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms on Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with four-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms. July 27, August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com.
Welcome to Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan, a very busy bench in Ladysmith. Mike's going to explain why we're in this park.
Transfer Beach, Terry. We're sitting here on beautiful Transfer Beach, one of the hidden gems here in the Cowichan Valley. It's a wonderful spot to bring your family. But you know what? The pleasure of being part of this pioneering new upcoming wine region is that we get to be this close to the ocean.
Okay, hold on a second. How much area do you want to claim for the Cowichan? Is Nanaimo part of the Cowichan? Is Victoria part of the Cowichan?
Let me answer that question. So Cowichan, as far as how we cover it as a tourism destination, we actually just call it Cowichan because when you get to Ladysmith, we're not in the valley anymore.
That's correct.
So when you think of Cowichan, you think all the way from the Malahat to Ladysmith and then all the way into Cowichan Lake. That's what we consider Cowichan. And then the Cowichan Valley is that kind of warm, ripe place where we're growing a lot of grapes.
Absolutely. Well, and to add to that conversation, we're right in the middle of what everybody's talking about in British Columbia is these our sub-GIs or our Appalachian system. And Cowichan's going to be one of the next ones. And we've actually geographically laid out the parameters as to where the Cowichan Valley is.
How long have you been waiting?
A couple years now, but I think by the end of this year, we should have our Appalachian dialed in.
Yeah. Okay, Lauren, what is the southernmost winery? What is the northernmost winery?
Probably either us or Unsworth would be the most southern. And the most northern would be probably Averill, would it not?
Yeah, Averill.
Yeah, definitely. Averill Creek would be it.
We're coming up to the second annual Cowichan Wine Festival. How did the first go?
Unbelievable. You were there, Terry. It was unbelievable. We, the feedback we get from people is what Mike said. To go to the winery, to meet the makers, to have the experience of being on the vineyard, and then to taste the wine, it gives people not just an opportunity to get to know these incredible wineries in Cowichan, but to hear the stories behind them. And then you're not just drinking wine, you're drinking a story. And that story comes home with you. You buy the wine, and you might pull a bottle out at a couple months later. Remember that time we were at Unsworth Winery? And so last year was amazingly successful, and we're so excited because this year is even going to be bigger and better.
Yeah. Are we going back to Shawnigan Lake and the actual campus?
Yes, we're going back.
Same
location as last year for the Friday night kickoff. It's at the pavilion, so the first night is party at the pavilion.
Nice.
And it's a great spot. And the neat thing about doing it there is that it gives people the opportunity to actually come into the school. They drive by and they have that Harry Potter-ish looking building, and they don't know if they're allowed on the property, but they are. It's open to the public.
And it's really cool because you have the rugby field below you. You have another one behind. It's glorious.
Yeah, it's a beautiful location. There's no doubt about it.
And nothing screams summer like Shawnigan Lake.
That's the truth.
It's a fabulous
right across
place from the lake. To be on a Friday night, August 23rd in Cowichan. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to, follow up a little bit more on that, it gives us the opportunity, all the participating wineries, for people to live the passion that we live every day. And it's an ongoing story. You know, when you do go home after it, 2-3 weeks later, you bought the bottle or you have the glass souvenir, is to sit and look at that and think, God, it was a great time. We had a great night that night and a great weekend. And experience of the valley is the thing that everybody should do.
And your wine glass is your ticket. You get a souvenir wine glass, and that's your ticket to all the wineries. And you go and you get free tastings all weekend long. I love that.
It's not just any ordinary festival, too. It's the camaraderie of our region. The camaraderie of our region is so vital to who we are. And you get to come experience that. When you come to our festival, even the kickoff evening, it kind of feels like you're just coming to a big family barbecue. We're all just hanging out. We all know each other. We're all pals. And you get to just come enjoy that evening with us. And then come to our locations afterwards.
Yeah. This is Tasty Room Radio. We're at Transfer Beach, which is below Ladysmith on Vancouver Island. It's the halfway point between the Cowichan Valley and my home in the Neuse Bay. And joining me on the bench here, overlooking the ocean, Karen Elgersma from Tourism Cowichan, Lauren Inglis, the manager and director of pleasure at Enrico Winery, and Mike Norichlo, a co-founder and partner in Emmerdale Vineyards. Okay, you know that you've done enough festivals, Mike, to know that each festival has a certain voice, attitude. Mm-hmm. Voice is a kind way of saying attitude. But so what is the Cowichan's? Is it still developing?
No. I'm sure it's still developing. It's still maturing over time. It's going to get more fine-tuned. But you know what the voice of the Cowichan is? And our festival is a reflection of this. It's exactly what our wine is as well. When you get off the ferry and you land here in the valley and you go, that's what Vancouver Island represents. That's what the Cowichan represents. That's what our festival is. I believe the wines of here, we can make absolutely world-class wines that lack pretense and snobbery. It's a come as you are. That's our festival.
Okay, let's see what's you, the winemakers, you, the wine guys. Let's see what's leading the charge here. Lauren, what's your best-selling wine by far?
By far would be the Ortega. The Ortega, we cannot produce enough Ortega. Absolutely sold out every year. The Pinot Noir would be our red by far. The Cabernet Libre, another red that we do. But for whites, 100% the Ortega.
Do you still have to explain what Ortega is?
Every day, probably.
It's summer in a glass.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the Goldilocks of white wine is what we call it. And people love it.
If they like what, they'll like Ortega.
any German lineage based wine is what that's the closest proximity you're going to get to it, because in essence that's what it is anyway.
Great nose,
floral nose, lots of freestone fruit flavors, peaches, apricot, nectarine, a little bit of a lime lychee nut finish to the back of it. Smooth, easy to drink, quick finish.
Mike, when you bought your land in your vineyard, was there Ortega planted there?
No, we don't have any Ortega on our property, but what is a standout for us at our place is our Sauvignon Blanc. But Sauvignon Blanc aside, Ortega aside, other names we could talk about, Pinot Gris, we'll put all that off to the side. What's so beautiful about our region, Cowichan meaning the warm land in native, we've got this long, warm ripening season, and not only do we have these aromatics to our whites and this bright acidity, they have so much texture. Even the Ortega, it's hard to compare it to like a German aromatic white because it has this beautiful, well-rounded texture. But if we're going to hang our hat somewhere, of course, a lot of us are shouting the Pinot Noir horn too. Yeah. But as far as top sellers go, that's moving out the door really fast. Our white wines end summertime here, as everybody's talking about. We're sitting at the beach in Ladysmith. Yes, we're outside the Cowichan Valley a little bit, just north of it.
Still in Cowichan. Thanks.
Can you see it from here?
You can definitely see it from here. It's right behind you, Terry. It's along the water. Yeah, you guys, it's too bad you're out in radio land there. The view we're sitting in here, sipping on our coffee, is spectacular.
We're in Ladysmith on the beach with Mike Lorichlo from Emmerdere, Lauren Inglis from Enrica Winery, and Karen Elgersma from Tourism Cowichan. If you guys, let's see if you guys agree. If you guys can actually run with the Pinot Noir handle, if you could actually get people to believe in what you're doing in terms of Pinot Noir, I think the sky's the limit for the valley.
100%. Pinot Noir is a grape that grows extremely well in our climate. There's no doubt about it. And virtually every vineyard that's growing right now has Pinot Noir in their repertoire, for sure. And there are some amazing Pinot Noirs out here. The opportunity for you to actually taste those Pinot Noirs coming up at the festival is the great part of the festival as well. So you can taste some of the signature grapes and wines that are being made. The nice thing is that all the wines that are going to be at the event are 100% Cowichan Valley.
And you get to talk to, in most cases, the winemaker.
Exactly. Winemaker, owners, everybody's going to be there. And that's the fun part about it. You're going to sit down, have a glass of wine, and talk to these people. Sometimes people are intimidated by talking to the winemaker and or the owners. But now you're out there. And like Mike said, it's come as you are. It's sit down, relax, have a glass of wine, listen to great music, have a little bit of food. It's just going to be a fun night.
This is Tasty Room Radio. We're coming up to the second annual Cowichan Wine Festival. We're at Transfer Beach, which is below Ladysmith on Vancouver Island. Joining me on the bench here, overlooking the ocean, Karen Elgersma from Tourism Cowichan, Lauren Inglis, Enrica Winery, and Mike Norichlo, Emmerdere Vineyards. Michael, do you know what you're pouring?
Absolutely. We'll be pouring our whole portfolio for you there. Except, I shouldn't even talk about our Sauvignon Blanc, because that's long gone already for the year, which is really too bad.
Well, it's a major tease is what it is.
Yeah, it's a major tease. I might slip a ball or two out for the festival, just because I feel like it. I got my secret stash. Right. Yeah, except we pour through our whites. We'll have our beautiful, lovely rosé. Of course, our Pinot Noir, which is just recently released. It's going to be exciting for you guys to try. But make sure you come to the festival and try through the wines of the valley, because you know what? I think Lauren would attest to this, and all the other wineries in the area would say the same thing. We're all having a hard time hanging on to wine because the consumer, the general public, all of you people out there listening to me say this, you are loving the wines of Vancouver Island and we're loving you for it.
Lauren Inglis, what are you pouring?
Two of our Charmes. We'll be doing, of course, the Ortega, Pinot Gris, Cabernet Libre, and Cabernet Foch. So all estate growing fruit, like we said earlier. And again, you know, getting the product onto the people's lips so that they can enjoy it is what we have to do.
Right. Can we tell people about the Charmes? I'm so excited about the Charmes.
So the Charmes, it's a great mix for the valley. And they're refreshing, they're bubbly, of course. They're crisp, they're clean, they're not overly sweet. Charmette method, we do three different ones. We do a 100% Pinot Gris, then we do a tri-blend of Pinot Gris, and then we do a 100% Pinot Noir Rosé. And they sell out. We do 300 cases at a time. We do 5 or 6 bottlings of it a year, and they are sold out.
What are the dates again?
The 23rd, 24th, and 25th of August. So we kick off on Friday, and we go all the way Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Sunday's like the day that you go and visit the wineries, right?
You can visit Saturday and Sunday. You have 2 days. Remember, your wine glass is your ticket. And you will have a passport, so you'll have a description of all the wineries and a map and how to get there and information about what they're doing. And then make sure you get your tickets for some of those long table dinners, because they're going to sell out quick.
Mike, was it you said that the Cowichan gets compared to Napa 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah, that's So it's not just Napa. We're being compared to Napa, the Willamette, coastal Oregon, the Okanagan 30 years ago, not necessarily for the styles of wine, but for the new passionate energy and the camaraderie of the region of all these. We're kind of second generation pioneers who are pushing forward.
Discovering yourself.
We're discovering. Yeah, totally. And that's really a bit of the terroir of our region right now, too. We're still, you'll notice there's lots of different varietals planted. We're figuring it out, and it's exciting to see what works, what doesn't, and to do it in such a beautiful valley where I can discover the wines that work during the day and then go mountain biking for the evening and bring the dog with me.
Lauren, you were there in Napa 30, 40 years ago. Tell us about that.
In the old days, Napa was an amazing, and it still is an amazing place. I mean, it can never not be an amazing place, but there's been a dramatic change. And you know, the going to the Cowichan Valley for one sec, what Mike was saying about how we're evolving and coming out of this, although we've been there for 25, 27 years. So we are progressing up, but I don't think we'll ever change. And we live in the best place in the world, far as I'm concerned. So I don't think the passion will ever get lost.
I think one of the reasons that passion will stay, and it's so alive now, is the wineries are small. You know, the way Cowichan is situated, the land is limited, and we have the ocean on either side. And so when you have a small boutique winery, you're always going to have that passion because you're not producing mass amounts of wine that you're selling all over the world. You're producing small amounts of wine, and so that passion's always going to show up. That terroir is going to be not only when you drink the wine, but when you hear the stories.
Yeah, that's another super unique thing with our region. Someone nailed this at a meeting we were having recently, that we're a grower winemaker region, which is very special to us. It's not just unique to us. There's a lot of regions like us around the world, but we're not a mass production region. We're everyone who's making wine here is growing the grapes as well, and there's something really special about that. The other thing I'll add, you can edit this out if you'd like, but one of the things that drives the camaraderie of the region is a slogan we have unwritten in our business plan. Takes a lot of beer to make great wine.
Okay, let's do the numbers. How many people came through last year? Anybody?
Oh my God, well, it was an absolute sellout. I know for us, it was one of our biggest weekends of the year. Probably 1,500 people come through.
What are you doing at the winery?
We're doing a Mexican fiesta.
Yes. Get out of here.
It's going to be a ton of fun. So we've got
tequila.
Tequila infused white wine. It's going to be awesome. field blended, of course. Yeah, foot stomped right in the fields. We've got a fantastic Mexican food truck coming up from Victoria. It's just going to be a great party. We try to have a party there every weekend anyway. So we're just going to elaborate on a little bit.
What are you doing at Emmendaire?
Emmendaire, you'll be able to come by. We'll be open Saturday and Sunday. We'll have our hours. We'll taste through the portfolio. You can book your private experience with us as well for an intimate educational stroll through the vineyard and a seat at our long table where we'll serve you locally made cheese and charcuterie platters as well. It's all on our website. Very easy to find at emmendairevineyard.com.
You want to add?
I think that half the fun of coming to Cowichan is starting with that dream of coming to Cowichan.
You can stay in Victoria. Yeah, it's that close.
Yeah, it right? is. People don't realize how close. There's so many ways to get here. But yeah, you can stay in Victoria. It's really a 40-minute drive from Victoria, depending on where your first stop is. And it's a beautiful drive. It's a breathtaking drive. And it is fun to be able to take your car and do the vineyards. But if you do want to stay in Cowichan, there's lots of places to stay. Stay in Ladysmith. Stay in Nanaimo.
Stay in Duncan.
Stay in Duncan. Yeah, Duncan.
Shawnigan Lake.
Shawnigan Lake. Cowichan Lake.
Stay in Coombs.
Stay in Coombs. Goats on Roof. So come. I mean, honestly, you can even rent houseboats in Maple Bay. There's so many cool places to stay here. But I just say get planning now, because half the fun is dreaming about your trip. So when you get here, you're ready and you get your wine glass and you just have a magical, amazing, delicious weekend.
Okay, experience the passion.
Experience
the passion. That's what it's all about. And the passion's everything. It's not just the wine side. It's the food, the hotels, the B&Bs, everybody. The people in Cowichan, we're here because we want to be here. We're not here because we have to be here. And that's the cool thing about it.
It shows in the wine.
Yeah. It does.
It does. It's infectious.
Yep.
What's the website?
TourismCowichan.com.
Facebook?
Tourism Cowichan.
Twitter.
Tourism Cowichan.
Instagram.
Tourism Cowichan.
Karen Elgersma from Tourism Cowichan. Lauren Inglis, Enrico Winery. And Mike Norichlo, Emmendaire Vineyards. Let's have a group hug. Thank you so much. Thank you for meeting me in Ladysmith.
Thanks so much.
Have yourself a great year too.
Cheers.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Canada's number one winery, Road 13. It's time to book your dinner with Backyard Farms on Road 13. Amazing artisan wines with four-course meals prepared by Chef Chris Van Hooydonk of Backyard Farms. July 27, August 17, September 28, and October the 5th. All the details at road13vineyards.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Make your plans for August 1st and 2nd as the first annual 97 South Song Sessions take place. The shows will take place at Bench 1775 Winery and Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center. August 1st and 2nd, some of the very best singer-songwriters will gather at Bench 1775. Details at bench1775.com.
I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. We found ourselves back at Rusted Rake, which is a great, I don't know how to describe it, because it's a restaurant, but it's not a restaurant. It's a coffee place, but it's a community gathering spot, and it's not old and funky. It's new. It's wood. It's in the middle of a farmer's field because the farming family actually built this. It's really cool. And I want to thank Jody Lucas for hosting us here, even though she didn't know we were coming. Myself and Brent Rowland, who's the winemaker at Avril Creek. You're on your way to the Shellfish Festival.
I am. That's correct. Yeah, yeah.
Have you been up there before?
No, I haven't. First time.
Are you a shellfish guy?
I love shellfish. If I could live on bivalves, I would live on bivalves alone.
What are you making at Avril Creek that would go with oysters, a crab, whatever?
I mean, I think that's the key to the wines from BC. It's not a cliche. They really pair well with the local cuisine. I think so. Every one of our whites is a beautiful. There's the salinity and the acidity and the texture of the acid is paired perfectly with everything from the ocean. So.
Did you say you were from here originally?
Correct. Yeah, yeah. West Coast. So my parents were gypsies. We moved every 5 years, but essentially, I don't know if you know Camano by Kitimat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I grew up there, which is now bulldozed
why,
and no longer exists.
Why were you not in the metal business?
Yeah, well, because I got out of there. Thank goodness. A little more luxurious working with wine than metal.
And how did you end up in the wine biz?
To be honest, I was in my 20s. I was a surfer that just traveled the world surfing, and the easiest job to get. I love food and wine, and the easiest job to get where I could work at night and surf all day was in restaurants. So I started there.
Where?
And then, Brazil, Argentina, Costa Rica, Fiji, South Africa.
Wherever the waves were.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Mostly Relais and Chateau properties and some like $100 million resorts in the Caribbean. So quite high end. And as I evolved through that, and toward the end of my 20s, I was like, okay, I can't do this forever. What? How do I evolve myself and stay part of the industry? So I honestly thought, Bill makes wine, so Bill's son makes wine. I didn't know that you could study it. So as soon as I found out, that was it. It was a no-brainer. I sold my house, quit my job, and I moved to Australia, University of Adelaide, and attended university down there.
His name is Brent Rowland, winemaker at Avril Creek. And where specifically in Australia did you work?
So I worked for 4 years during school at a place in McLaren Vale called Alpha Box and Dice.
Oh, I love those guys.
Yeah, he's probably biggest liquid mentor. He is.
How did you discover them? They're so cool.
So I worked at a wine shop, and he came in when Justin Lane originally owned it. He's now sold it. When he came in, he did a tasting, and I was enthralled with this guy right away. His wines, his vision, what he was doing. So I actually said, you know what, I'll come. Can I work for you for free? And it was the best decision I ever made because that was his first year. He couldn't really afford to pay me, but he felt so guilty. He would save all the good jobs for when I went down there, and he'd pay me in wine. And then I went to Margaret River in Australia, in Western Australia, worked for Kate Mintel.
Did you make Chard?
I did. Yeah, absolutely. Chardonnay and Pinot's my jam. And then after that, I went to Calera in California, very lucky institution. I think in the world of whole bunch Pinot Noir, you've got the two disciples in Burgundy, DRC and Dujac, are the two key, and then they have four disciples. They've got Christom in Oregon, Byfar in Australia, Escarpment in Martinborough in New Zealand, and Clare in California. And I've worked for all three except for Christom. And I had a job at Christom, but long story short, I chose to go somewhere else instead. Regrets, but that's okay. So yeah, they really instilled in me, I really wanted to work for these guys because I thought they were the best at taking their Burgundian ethos and adapting it to their specific region.
To what end were you trying to educate yourself and were educating yourself and prepared to have that nomadic life? Did you see yourself with your own winery at some point?
I didn't really have that vision necessarily. Yes, I think you always have that in the back of your mind, but it was definitely my goal to get as much knowledge, and I didn't want answers from these guys. That's very important. I wanted problem-solving skills. I wanted to learn how to problem-solve. That's why I didn't want to go to just Burgundy and learn recipe. It was really important for me to gain all the skills that I can do so that I could come back eventually to the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, Vancouver Island, and figure out this area. Be a little ostentatious about it.
How long did you spend in Ontario?
4 years, 3.5.
At one spot?
Yep, Pearl Morset. So I was the winemaker there for 3.5 years, and very, very beneficial, because the mandate there is about exploration, experimentation, pushing the wines as far as you can push them. Yeah. And so I learned a set of skills that are really fundamental in moving forward.
J-O-U-E, Jou, Avril Creek Vineyard. Brent Rowland is the winemaker. In those 4 years, did you keep an eye on what BC was doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Avril Creek has always been on my radar because, not at the same time, but Andy and I worked at the same place in Martinborough, at a place called Escarpment. So that's why Avril was always on my radar. And it being one of the more notable wineries on the island, it's, you know, that's has always, so when the job came up, I jumped at it.
You've realized that you flew over or drove around or through the Okanagan to get to Vancouver Island.
Correct, yeah.
You know.
I did work in the Okanagan at one stage. That was my first full-time job as assistant winemaker at Culmina.
Okay.
With Pascal Medevin.
Okay. I'm Terry David Mulligan, Tasting Room Radio. We found ourselves back at Rusted Rake. It's really cool. And I want to thank Jody Lucas for hosting us here, even though she didn't know we were coming. We is myself and Brent Rowland, who's the winemaker at Avril Creek. So what did you like about the Cowichan Valley, and what did you like about Avril?
They have here what I think consumers are now looking for. What we do better than warmer climates and cool climates is perfume, poise, tension, elegance, consumable wines. Yeah. So that's what we do well. And that's what Avril Creek does amazingly well. So I'm really happy to be working with these wines. It's the style I want to consume, so the style I want to produce.
I mean, you can make his Pinot. You can make the, they're famous for their Pinot, of course. Mm-hmm. But you also, as a winemaker, you want to make your own statement. So is this it?
Yes and no. I think everything is going to have very much respecting what Andy has done and the effort, the pioneering spirit, and carrying it forward and moving it forward. So yes, and then yes, this is specifically, the Jus are my little experimental wine. So with the classics, they'll remain very much true to the Avril Creek spirit. And with the Jus, that's the whole thing about them. I want them to be playful. I want them to be consumed with laughter at a long table. I don't want them to be precious. I don't want you to cellar these for 15 years. But they're not pedestrian. They still have structure and texture, and they have integrity. But
you're saying they have balance?
Yes, balance and structure and texture. And
J-O-U-E, Jou, Avril Creek Vineyard. Brent Rowland is the winemaker. Now, here's the thing. As much as I'm interested in the front of your label and what's in the bottle, mm-hmm. I am really, really interested in the fact that you are one of the few wineries who make a field blend and say it on the back of the label or even on the front of the label, because most of them don't. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to figure out why they don't. Do we know what a field blend is? Does it scare us off?
Well, I think that's a pretty astute point, because I didn't...
That's what I do.
I didn't really understand either, and for me, the field blend spirit is the clearest segue from the vineyard to the glass. So it's not about variety, it's not about preconceived notions about the variety, it's about the region itself, and more specifically to Avril Creek, this is going to be, the spirit will remain the same, but the blend will change, and I don't want to be locked into any percentage. I don't want people to get fixated on that. I want them to taste Vancouver Island in the glass. So,
describe a field blend to people.
Okay, a field blend traditionally is all the whites, all the varieties that are going into the blend are picked at the same time, fermented together, and bottled all the same. So there's
maybe not in the same field.
No, not necessarily the same field, but from the same estate. Now, they've kind of evolved that, New World winemakers have evolved that to...
Because in Old World, in Portuguese terms, that's 20, 30, 40 different varietals in one bottle.
Exactly. And they ripen at different times. And so winemakers have taken that idea, that spirit in the modern day, and evolved it, and, you know, maybe picked them at different dates so that everything is right, the perfect ripeness when you pick it. Because to me, phenolic ripeness is fundamental.
So your white field blend is what?
Grieg-Gewurz.
Grieg-Gewurz.
Yeah. At this stage, yes, but who knows?
Next year, blended together?
Picked together, fermented separately, but exactly the same way. So the fruit came in, I foot stomped it in half-ton bins, left it overnight. I wanted to build some structure to the mid-palate through skin contact. Mm. Pressed it the next day into older oak vessels. I wanted organoleptic influence from the vessel, but not oak flavor. So I don't believe any vessel's neutral, but for all intents and purposes, it's an older, neutral oak vessel.
Are your feet neutral?
No, plenty of flavor in there.
There you go. It's the 2018 Field Blend from Jou. J-O-U-E from Alvo Creek. It's a very natural looking label. Field blend on the back, 50-50?
Yep, pretty much exactly, yeah.
But you blended that together, right?
Yeah,
you
went I was going to be just Gewurz. Yeah. And I wasn't even going to do a field blend white, to be honest. I gave the Gris the same treatment that I gave from this part of the vineyard that I gave to what is now our Sommeneau's Gris, our top Gris. And just through fermentation élevage, they not bad, they just evolved separately. And I didn't see them together anymore. So this, I saw it with the Gewurz. So I did some blends, some trials, and we came up with it.
Okay, Brett, tell me about the red field blend.
Okay, so the red was, the fruit came in. I put about 30 liters of active Pinot Gris juice into a tank, put the red fruit in, whole bunch, 100% whole bunch, sealed the tank, left it for 2 weeks, didn't even look at it. I wanted it to ferment, so not full carbonic maceration, but an element of that, interberry fermentation.
What's the percentage?
Is it
50-50,
no.
30-70?
No, it's things went in, and this was the original.
How many different varietals are in there?
There is Merlot, there's Pinot Gris, there's Marcel Foch, and there's Pinot Noir, so four.
It's like a spit bucket.
It is almost, but a very tasty spit bucket. So this was fun. After 2.5 weeks, I pressed it off, and I was really happy with the perfume and the vibrancy, but I wanted more structure. So the Sommeneau's Pinot Noir from 2018 was incredibly structured, so I had to be very careful about extracting those tannins. So through cap management, I was very delicate, and then in the press cycle, I stopped it at about 1 bar, which for me is about 3/4 of the way through the press cycle, dumped the press, and there was still lots of elements left in this beautiful Pinot Noir fruit. I didn't want to waste it. So I took the jus red, put it on top of those Pinot Noir skins, left it for 3 or 4 days.
Ripasso.
And pressed it off again. And not only did it give me the structure and the texture as after, but it gave me another level of complexity to the fruit profile and the perfume.
Do you have any Italian in you?
I love Italian wine. It was my first. If I had to pick the whole desert island thing, if I had to pick a country, it'd be Italy. Region would be Burgundy, and specific wine would be Champagne.
How about Verona? How about Sartori?
Oh, new for me. I haven't really delved into there, but
King of Ripasso there. All right. What's the price point on the white?
25. They're both 25.
How much did you make?
300 cases.
Each?
Yeah. 350, I think, of the white and 300 of the red. So small production. I want to keep it at 25 for as long as humanly possible. We still have to make money. We're a business. But like I said, I want these to be joyful. At a long table, I see them with laughter and food and not to be thinking. I don't want people to be writing notes and discussing. And it's about joyful pleasantry and consumability.
Welcome back to the coast.
Thank you, sir. It feels good to be home.
Alvocreek.ca, at Alvocreek. His name is Brent Rowland, winemaker, surfer, bad dude. Check him out at Alvocreek. I'll see you at the Cowichan and Valley Wine Festival.
Brilliant.
Mid-August.
Brilliant. Stop into the winery. Awesome.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Bench 1775. Make your plans for August 1st and 2nd as the first annual 97 South Song Sessions take place. The shows will take place at Bench 1775 Winery and Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center. August 1st and 2nd, some of the very best singer-songwriters will gather at Bench 1775. Details at bench1775.com.